This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show special edition. Happy Thanksgiving. It is Thanksgiving. This is episode number 914 on Thanksgiving Day. And this is your host, Jason Hartman. And I am very thankful, very grateful to have you with me today. Just always grateful. You know, I think one of the easiest keys to success, a really easy, simple strategy to be more successful at any area of life is to simply be grateful, to express gratitude, even if you don't express it externally to others, which ideally you would do, right? Just to be grateful internally, in your own thoughts. In your own thoughts, when you are grateful, you are a stronger, more resilient, better person who can withstand more of life's challenges more easily, because gratitude really gives us all a sense of perspective, doesn't it? It helps us appreciate what we have. And if we don't appreciate what we have, it's very hard to ever get more. So gratitude, I think, is one of the simple, easy strategies for success. So for this Thanksgiving Day episode, we're not recording this on Thanksgiving Day yet here. We're recording it just a couple of days before, but I am with our new podcast producer, someone I'm very grateful for, and that is Mr. Adam Schroeder. I'm at his home, the home of his wife, Erin, and his whole family. Adam has four kids. You have four kids, Adam.
That I am. I'm grateful for all of them.
Yeah. That's a lot. I remember hearing a sermon in church years ago where the pastor at Mariners Church in Irvine, Newport Beach, kind of right on the border, technically. He was up there talking, and he has four kids, by the way, four boys, just like you do. You have four boys, too.
So his house is loud.
Yeah, so it's kind of a funny parallel, actually. I just remembered this. Kenton was up there talking, and he says, you know, who is more happy with their life? Who is more satisfied? Is it the guy who has $4 million or the guy who has four kids? And Kenton says, well, it's the guy with four kids, because if he has four kids, he doesn't want any more. But if he has $4 million, he might want $8 million, right? Four kids is enough, right? Yeah.
That, for us, it is. People keep asking me if we're going to have one more and make a basketball team. And I just tell them, if they have the basketball skills I do, be a terrible basketball team.
I can't wait till Brittany hears this episode, because her husband is a basketball coach. And of course, she's been working with us for like 9 years now. And Brittany says that her oldest, Griffin, is like a natural basketball player. Now, can that actually be hereditary? I don't know about that, but it's interesting nonetheless. So, Adam, when I walked into your home yesterday, stayed over last night, I got one more night here, and then I'm off to my mom's house for Thanksgiving. What I absolutely loved right away is your family mission statement on the wall. It says, the Schroeder family, we will, and it has, you know, pictures of the family. And this is something that I remember reading one of the Stephen Covey books, the late Stephen Covey, who, of course, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People and all of his other great books. But he has a book about the family mission statement and talks a lot about mission mm-hmm. statements and stuff. What inspired you to do that and put it on the wall? It looks awesome, by the way.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's really great.
Yeah,
I love it.
Something that Erin, she might have actually gotten it from that, but Erin just said we were kind of in a little bit of a funk, and it was, you know, we were dealing with the kids, and they were kind of driving us a little bit crazy for few weeks.
See, if you have four kids, you're content. Yeah. You don't want any more.
And we were just thinking, you know, we need a way to show the kids what's important to us. And a way we can just, you know, eventually just be like, you know, look at the wall. Are you following that?
Right.
And so we just sat down and we actually split up and I wrote down mine and she wrote down hers. I'm like, what is important to us as a family? So she came back with a list of like 20 and I came back with a list of 20, somewhere in that range.
That's a lot of things. It is. You pared it down a bit.
We looked at where there was overlap.
Right.
And we said, okay, well, this, if it's important to both of us, it's probably important for the family. And then if I don't have it on my list, why should I have it on my list?
Right.
Kind of thing. And we came up with, what is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of them listed, but some of them have ampersands because we couldn't quite get it down to 9 exactly. But so we just kind of put it up there. We figured this way when the kids, like I said, when the kids get older and whenever we have moments where we're questioning things, we can look up there and be like, okay, am I doing this?
Yeah.
So that was the impetus behind it.
I absolutely love it. And it's very artfully done. It's very tasteful. And there is your wife, Erin, walking by. And Erin, you going to come down and be on the podcast?
Nope.
That, in case you didn't hear that, folks, she said nope.
she's not into this kind of stuff.
She's not doing it. Good stuff. It is really great to have you producing the Creating Wealth show now.
Thank you.
I know our listeners have noticed the production quality has already increased, and Adam's only been on the job now, what, maybe 3 weeks?
Well, I started the Creating Wealth at the beginning of November.
Yeah.
I've been editing for you since September of 15?
Of 2015, yeah. So like over two years now.
But yeah. I hadn't done the Creating Wealth. So you've been asking me to do it for a little while.
Yeah, yeah. So what we did is we switched things up. Of course, if you're new to the show, you know, we have a whole bunch of other podcasts we produce. The Longevity and Biohacking Show, the Holistic Survival Show, you know, the American Monetary Association Show, the Young Wealth Show, blah, blah, blah. There's a whole bunch of them, right? Anyway, more than enough podcasts going on over here. Over 4,000 episodes, I think, now.
There's a lot.
Like that. There's a lot. And of course, just the Creating Wealth show is almost at 1,000 episodes. I'm very grateful and thankful to say that. You know, after publishing for 12 years now, it's been a long time. You were doing our other shows, but I'm really glad to have you on board doing this show. You're just really in tune with it. You're interested in real estate investing, and you became a client a while back.
Yeah, back in February or March, somewhere right around there.
So, 9 months ago, you bought your first property through us.
Yeah,
right?
We bought one in February, and then we bought another one in July. Uh-huh. I think we didn't realize we were going to be buy a second one that quickly, but we kind of looked at our bank account after a few months, and like, oh, we could afford another one, so let's go ahead and do that. So, we're going to try to keep buying one, maybe two a year.
Yeah.
Two might be a bit of a stretch at the moment, but Erin wants to quit. So
we have to work towards that
because I don't make enough.
Okay. So, well, let's give you a little background on, you know, what it is you both do and so forth. So we're here at your home in Austin, Texas, and thank you for taking me in as your guest for 2 nights.
Absolutely.
Whenever I stay at someone's home, I never stay for more than 3 days because I remember the Ben Franklin saying, Ben Franklin, just super wise, one of our founding fathers, obviously. Ben Franklin said, house guests are like fish. They begin to smell after 3 days. So I never want to wear out my welcomes. I'm on my way to mom's house tomorrow, and I'm going to see if I can do another podcast recording with Aunt Joan, who's been on the show before, who's built quite a real estate empire. I saw that growing up. And then my mom, who's built a decent real estate empire herself, you know, I grew up with that. So those were two great influences as real estate investors on me growing up.
Yeah, I don't think anybody in my family has real estate in their portfolio. My uncle might have, I think my uncle had one, but it was because when my mom's father passed away, he got those, but they sold those since then. So we're actually, I think, the only people in our family who have rental properties, and it's been a bit of an adjustment.
Well, I'm guessing you're mentally the only one in your family who has a family mission statement on your wall in your family room too, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's cool. So you are taking leadership in both of these things in your family, so that's great.
Yeah, we got all the, you're going to be a slumlord jokes whenever we first started investing. No. No, I've seen pictures. That's a nice house.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
hate to break it to you.
And listen, a lot of that is just silly people that don't understand the way things work. You know, it's armchair quarterback criticism. You know, it's always out there. It's just part of human nature. It's part of the way we all are, right?
I don't do that, so it's weird.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what they think. Okay, so you've got two properties now, and are they both in Memphis?
They are. They're both in Memphis. They're about 10 or 12 miles apart. Mm-hmm. You know, They're both there and they're both rented. Thankfully, we had our first home was rented when we bought it. Second home, they were still renovating it.
Right.
And so we had 1 month that it was not rented, but then it got rented out. So we'll get our first payment from that in early December.
Good stuff.
So that'll be nice.
And tell us about those deals. Like, how much were they and how much do they rent for? And tell us about your experience.
The first one we bought, we went on the low end because we weren't, it was one of those, I guess we're going to get in this. It's new.
Maybe you are a slumlord. Yeah.
So we bought, it was listed at 55, but the appraisal came in low. And so they dropped it to 53. So we bought it for 53 and it started renting at $695. Their lease ended in September and the property manager upped the rent to $725.
Awesome.
So we're getting that. And the second one we bought.
You're doing a lot better than 1% on that. Yeah. Congratulations.
It was 1.3 or so whenever we originally bought. So we're probably up to about 1.4.
And we're, of course, talking about the RV ratio or the rent to value ratio. Yeah, good.
And our second one was 76.9. Mm-hmm. And again, the appraisal came in a little lower. So they dropped it to 75, I believe. Yeah, 75. And that rents for, they just rented it out for $850.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So another good one. Yeah, that's great. Good stuff. Good to hear. You mentioned the appraisal thing, and I tell you something, that is a common challenge nowadays. I'd say our two biggest challenges in the business nowadays are, number one, getting any inventory of properties at all to sell. Inventory is obviously very scarce, very limited. In all my years doing this since I was 19 years old, in the traditional business and the last, 13 years in the investment-only business, or 14 years almost, really, you know, I have never seen inventory this tight. This has got to be the lowest level of supply of housing I've ever seen. And so that's super challenging. But the other problem is the appraisals don't come in because the appraisers are always looking in the rear view mirror. And so they're looking at comps for properties that are, 4 months old, 6 months old, whatever. And they just can't bring the appraisals in. And, it makes the buyer think on one hand, well, I mean, I like it when people finance properties because that appraisal acts as a safeguard. Mm-hmm. In fact, I would even encourage some of our cash buyers to get an appraisal, but the problem is you can't take the appraisal as the gospel because it's just not. It's always a rear view mirror picture, in an accelerating market. And when you have a very quickly accelerating market, it just doesn't work a lot of times. So one example that we had just the other day, this was Carrie's client, is we had an appraisal that was, I think, $7,000 apart. My suggestion to Carrie when she came to me was, why don't you see if the client will go up? The client didn't want to go up and split it. Okay. They didn't want to quite go that far. I said, why don't you see if the client will go up by $2,000 and the local market specialist will come down by $5,000. And in this particular case, that worked. They agreed. So it doesn't always have to be an even split, but folks, if your appraisal doesn't come in, you're probably going to have to pay some extra money.
Yeah. We were expecting to have to pay at least half, but
they agreed.
Were willing. Yeah. They didn't even agree. They just said, we'll drop it down to the appraisal. We didn't even ask.
That's
fantastic. So we're okay with that.
Yeah. But everybody listening, don't expect that. Okay.
Because, we were fully expecting to have to at least meet in the middle.
Kick in some extra money, to meet the appraisal halfway or something. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So that was, that's what happened on the acquisition, and those are both rented now. Mm-hmm. It sounds like they're going pretty well.
Yeah, they're going well. We have zero plans in going to see them anytime soon. Mm-hmm. We don't have any family vacations planned to Memphis. We just did our California one.
Memphis is not a hot vacation spot. Imagine that. Well, it is if you like music and Elvis and,
Memphis, maybe when the kids get a little older. Yeah. Right now, it's between 7 and almost 3, so it's not really the scene for them.
Yeah, right. Maybe when they're a little older. But you went on a big vacation and you actually drove all over the place to California and back. And wow, that's a long
drive. I mean,
you
want to talk gratitude. That was one of the things Erin mentioned to you, her vacation policy that her job has. And that has been a blessing. She gets 6 weeks a year and we were able to take 2 weeks and go. We went to Carlsbad Caverns. We went to White Sands. We did a weekend in San Diego, just kind of hanging out. We went to the beach. Then we went to LA for a day, just to kind of hang out. Saw some old friends, saw my cousins that I hadn't seen in 20 plus years.
And one of the things you said to me last night is you realize how grateful you are not to live in Los Angeles. Yeah. me too. Having grown up there, I'm grateful not to live in LA.
Yeah. I grew up there from late 80s to early 90s. And I always thought since I moved back to Austin, like, oh, I should move back to California. The weather was great. I liked it there. And then I went back and actually drove in LA. And I was like, I told Aaron as we were leaving, I said, if I ever talk about living in LA again, just remind me of this traffic. Because when it takes an hour and a half on a random early afternoon to go 20 miles, I don't live
there. It might take an hour and a half to go 12 miles. I mean, it's just, LA is beyond high on the hassle factor. It's just too high on the hassle factor. I've always wondered, like, it's an oddity about real estate. I have this theory that the price of real estate drives everything. I mean, maybe not everything, but a lot of things in life, right? It drives how long it takes to wait to get a table at a restaurant, how hard it is to find a parking space, how bad the traffic is. Of course, it drives that, obviously. It drives what the job pays in that market.
Oh, yeah.
It drives whether or not you can get a table and sit and leisurely drink your coffee at the coffee shop, or if you have to stand. And if you look at places like New York City, you know, like Manhattan, especially, right?
They don't even offer you chairs there.
Oh, it's, you know, I just don't understand. Like, there's a lot of, like, things that really just don't make sense in the world, right? Why is it that these really expensive places are really hard to live in? Like, I think one of the easiest places to live is Phoenix. Out of all the places I've lived in my life, which the list is growing, okay? I mean, I grew up in L.A. I lived in Orange County as an adult, but I moved around a lot in Irvine and Newport Beach, buying and selling houses for many years. I'd kind of live in them and sort of speculate as I lived there in Irvine and Newport Coast and stuff. Then I moved to Arizona in 2011 and essentially lived there really for 6 years, but I had a short stint where I moved back to San Diego for a little tax write-off. Talked about it on the show before. But of all these places I've lived, it's odd to me that places like LA and, you know, I'll take New York City as two good examples of this. I think both of those places are very hard to live, right? They're high on the hassle factor. Resources are scarce. Everything is like wait in line for everything. It's just, it's a lot of people competing for very limited resources. Mm-hmm. Yet these places are super expensive. And, you know, I kind of say, look, there are 11 states, I think, in the country that are no income tax states. We're in one of them, Texas. I live in one of them now, Nevada. And I say, reduce your expense if you can. Live, or make it your goal to live someday in a no income tax state. And a lot of these places are very pleasant, easy to live places with low real estate cost, reasonably low cost of living, reasonably good weather, no state income taxes. I just kind of don't get it why people live in some of these other places. Now, I know that, you know, if you live in New York City, you're mostly around a bunch of really smart people. But Austin is no schlocker for that. I mean, yeah. Austin has like...
And you don't freeze to death half the year.
Yeah. And
you just sweat to death half the year.
Maybe. Fair enough. But, you know, every place... Hey, New York in the summer is pretty darn tough, okay? But, you know, you have a very educated population here. I mean, there's a lot of really smart, interesting people in places like Austin. I mean, there are in San Francisco, too. Now, I had dinner with Tim Ferriss last time I was here, just a month ago or so. He moved from the Bay Area to Austin and got this same kind of sort of a population in both places. Mm-hmm. But one is massively more expensive to live in, and that's the Bay Area, San Francisco, of course. Not just the real estate prices and the general cost of living, but the government. You know, if you're successful in California, you're paying 13.3% to the Socialist Republic of California. Here you pay zero. You know,
you just pay it in your property taxes. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but you pay it there in your property taxes too, even though you've got Prop 13, which is probably one of the things that have fundamentally saved the California real estate market, okay? Howard Jarvis, back in the late 70s, Proposition 13 made it hard to raise taxes. They still have special assessment districts called Mellow Roos and so on and so forth, bond issues and such. But you pay it in your property taxes there too, just because the values are so high. So yeah. The percentage may be lower, but the price is so much higher that you're paying it either way. But hey, before we go too far afield into the real estate discussion, remember it is Thanksgiving Day. We're releasing this episode. And I want to talk a little bit about gratitude. Okay. So you're familiar with PragerU. Mm-hmm. And I love some of PragerU's videos. This is Dennis Prager, who I've met before. He used to endorse us on the radio when he was on KRLA. And he's just done a great job with PragerU. So I want to play this little video, and Adam and I will just have a little armchair quarterbacking comment on it and so forth, and then we'll kind of wrap it up, okay? So here we go.
How many times have you heard someone say they want to make a better world? It is a noble sentiment, but very hard to achieve, right? Well, actually, it's quite easy. All we have to do is increase just one human trait. This trait is so powerful that it alone can make people happier without working on their happiness and make them better. And by better, I mean more generous, more honest, more kind, more everything good, without a single lesson in morality. So then, what is this one almost magical thing? Drum roll, please. It's gratitude. You can't be a happy person if you aren't grateful, and you can't be a good person if you aren't grateful. Almost everything good flows from gratitude, and almost everything bad flows from ingratitude. Let's begin with ingratitude. Here's a rule of life. Ingratitude guarantees unhappiness. It is as simple as that. There isn't an ungrateful happy person on earth. And there isn't an ungrateful good person on earth. There are two reasons. Reason one is victimhood. Ingratitude always leads to or comes from victimhood. Ungrateful people, by definition, think of themselves as victims. And perceiving oneself as a victim or perceiving oneself as a member of a victim group may be the single biggest reason people hurt other people, from hurtful comments to mass murder. People who think of themselves as victims tend to believe that because they've been hurt by others, they can hurt others. And the second reason ungrateful people aren't good people is that ingratitude is always accompanied by anger. The ungrateful are angry, and angry people lash out at others. If ingratitude makes people unhappy and mean, then gratitude must make people happy and kind. And so it does. Think of the times you have felt most grateful. Were they not always accompanied by a feeling of happiness? Weren't they also accompanied by a desire to be kinder to other people? The answer, of course, is yes. Grateful people aren't angry, and they don't see themselves as victims. The problem, however, and it's a big one, is that in America and much of the rest of the world, people are becoming less grateful. Why? Because people are constantly told that they are entitled to things they haven't earned, what are known as benefits or entitlements. And the more things that people think they should get, the less grateful they will be for whatever they do get, and the more angry and therefore unhappy they will be when they don't get them. Here are two rules of life. Rule number one, the less you feel entitled to, the more gratitude you will feel for whatever you get, and the happier you will be. Rule number two, the more you feel entitled to, the less happy you will be. That's why, for example, children who get whatever they want are usually less happy children. We have a word for such children, spoiled. And no one thinks of a spoiled child as a happy child. And certainly not a kind one. The more that you feel that life or society owes you, the angrier you will get, the less happy you will be. As a result, we are increasing the number of angry, unhappy, and selfish people. The other way we are making people unhappy, and even meaner, is by cultivating a sense of victimhood. People are constantly told that they are victims because of their upbringing, because of past prejudice against their group, because of material inequality, because they are female, and for many other reasons. Next time you want to assess any social policy, ask this question first. Will this policy increase or decrease gratitude among people? You will then know whether it is something that will bring more goodness and happiness to the world or less. If I were granted one wish, it would be that all people be grateful. Gratitude is the source of happiness and the source of goodness. And the more good people and the more happy people there are walking around, the happier and better our world will be. If you have a way of achieving such a world without increasing gratitude, let me know what it is. I'm Dennis Prager.
Well, Adam, isn't that awesome? I love how concise Dennis Prager does that. You know, when I used to listen to him on the radio many years ago, he had what he called the happiness hour. And his whole contention was that if you want to make the world a better place, a lot of people want to make the world a better place, right? The first thing you can do is become a happy person, because happier people, just by nature of them being happy, if they do nothing else, contribute nothing else, they will make the world a better place because they're just better to be around, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
One of the things that I, whenever I'm feeling down and ungrateful, is I try to think of the things that I actually have.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what you talked about whenever you were saying the resource, you don't realize the resources you have. But I just think, I'm like, okay, we have a house.
Mm-hmm.
I've got happy, healthy kids.
Yeah. You're not out on the street. Your kids are not sick, right?
We've got two functioning cars.
Right.
You know, my wife has a job. Yeah. Kind of start going over the list and...
You're already richer than two-thirds of Earth, than two-thirds of humanity. Like, you're way richer, you know? I mean
first, yeah, we won the lottery because we live in the United States the most part. I mean, you know, you're already in the top 5% just living here instead of
Zimbabwe,
other random country. Yeah.
That just got a new president. Maybe it'll get better now that Mugabe is gone. But no, it's another subject. Let's do that later. Go ahead.
So, I mean, it's important to look at, just kind of take a survey of what you are grateful for.
It's amazing.
Because, I mean, the thing about the spoiled kids is true. I mean, our kids, as you've seen, have so many toys.
Your kids have a lot of toys.
So many toys.
Yes, they do.
But in fairness, they don't ask for more for the most part.
Yeah. Right.
They only play with a third of them at most anyway. So, but we limit what they can bring in. We get the hand-me-downs. Those are in there. Probably not going to go away. But we, you know, if they start saying, I need this or I want this, we just say, okay, well, how are you going to get it?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to use? And they have their own money. And we have a rule with them. When they get money, they have to save 20%. They have to donate 10%.
Mm-hmm.
And they can keep 70%.
This is basically richest man in Babylon formula. Yeah.
And so they decided, we adopted Liberty, our dog, a year ago. And my 5-year-old decided with all of his birthday money, he wanted the proceeds to go to Austin Pets Alive, which is the group that we adopted her through. So, you know, it's quote unquote only $36, but $27 something, but it's his money.
It's a lesson.
And he knows exactly where it's going. And
exactly.
He chose what he was going to put his money towards.
So a couple things about that. Number one is that concept of giving. And I think Tony Robbins probably expressed this, at least for me, the best. Dennis Waitley too, and Jim Rohn, of course. But is the concept that, you know, if you give, when you donate to charity, it sets up your subconscious mind for abundance, because it tells your subconscious mind there's more. There's not scarcity. Right? So even if you have very little and you give something, like the worst thing about being poor, and I think Earl Nightingale taught me this back when I was 17 years old, the worst thing about being poor is it deprives people of the inability to give. That's got to be really difficult. Okay, that's one concept of it. But the other concept of it that Prager was talking about in the video is this concept of entitlement. There are so many people in the world, and, you know, we all feel like this from time to time. I certainly do. Okay, I'll be the first to admit it. That feel like they are owed something, right? Like they deserve something. And, you know, that is a big weight to carry around. Like, you wouldn't think that's a weight, but when you're, like, in this mindset of, you're owed this, you're owed that, the government, especially when it's government, like the government has to give you something, or your parents have to give you something, or something like that, it is a tremendous weight. That is a burden. When you don't have that, it's freeing, you know, to realize that, like, nobody owes me anything. It's freeing. Whoa. It's a burden to have people owe you stuff, you know, to feel that way.
I think that for the most part, because I think for the most part, people don't want to have help internally. Like if you look at any given person, I would say that the vast majority of people in the world don't want to have to rely on other people.
I would agree with that.
And so I think it's kind of an innate human thing. I think they may not know how to do that. And I think gratitude definitely.
But then there's the whole discussion of, do you create dependency by giving people stuff? You know, like the spoiled kid example in the mm-hmm. Dennis Prager video, right? Is that you take away people's ability, or at least their motivation, mm-hmm. if not their ability to, when you hand them stuff. So there's a certain, you know, it's like you can either, you know, give a man a fish or teach a man to fish, right? You know, like feed him for a lifetime or feed him for a day concept. Mm-hmm. And that's part of it. But in this talk, I'm just talking about the internal belief system. And that's what Thanksgiving is about. It's about feeling grateful for what you have and giving thanks for what you have. Whatever your station in life, there are no small parts, only small actors. So don't feel entitled. Even if you legally are entitled, okay, and you may be, yeah. right? Like, you know, if someone takes advantage of you in a business deal, right, you may well be legally entitled. But if you keep replaying in your mind how this person screwed me over, that person, you know, and you keep like obsessing about that. And yeah.
instead
that,
of focusing on the good things your
yeah,
business has done,
that is
or the
a
deal.
Chip on the shoulder, yeah. man. That's awful. That's not going to serve you.
There are things like that that can be put in the background and you think about the positives. Because, I mean, the negatives are going to be there. You're never going to have a life with no negatives. But it's all about what you focus on.
So at least one day a year, yeah. on Thanksgiving Day, let's just
You can have
back.
A Tesla that's falling apart in your life yeah. and you can still focus
thankfully,
on the good things.
I don't have that anymore. yeah, exactly. But thankfully, I don't have a crappy Tesla anymore. I'm so grateful for that. That's another thing to be grateful for at Thanksgiving. But, you know, just really trying every day to think about what we all have and where we are. And if we are living anywhere in the Western world, you know what I often think of? I have this morbid fascination with communism. I don't know why. It's just weird. For example, remember when the iPads came out with the great screen, what's it called? The Retina display, oh, yeah. right? I remember when I first got my first iPad with the Retina display. Do you know what I first did on that thing? I went to Google Maps or Google Earth, one or the other, and I looked at Pyongyang in North Korea, mm-hmm. because I'm just so fascinated with the hermit regime in this dark country that, like, if you've seen the satellite images oh, yeah. at night, there's, like, no lights. The whole thing's just dark.
China.
Right? And
dark.
Yeah.
South Korea.
South Korea. Light. Lit up by, like, a candle.
Apparently there's right? an ocean between
yeah.
them?
Yeah. No, there's not. It's
oh, no. I'm just
country.
Saying, like, at
it's
night, you look at it and you're no like, lights. Is there an ocean there? Yeah, what's going no. on?
Yeah, because it's dark, right? And then I remember reading this article about these North Korean prison camps and just the appalling, appalling conditions. And, you know, these people that are in prison in North Korea are probably, the vast majority are not even criminals. They're just political prisoners, right?
Political prisoners who took a loaf of bread. I think you get like 15 months hard labor just for that.
Or 15 years yeah. or said something wrong about the Kim family, right? And, you know, like you could be living in a North Korean prison camp. Like that's just a luck of the genetic dice, mm-hmm. you know, or the geographical dice. One or the other or both. I mean, think about how if you live anywhere in the Western world in a allegedly free country, right? You are so rich by any measurement, mm-hmm. no matter where your station in that country is. I mean, if you live in a crappy mobile home that's not even a double wide, okay, you have a home. And it's warm.
And it probably has electricity.
And it has
electricity
and running water. And you know what? You are ahead of the vast majority of the globe's population just right there. And that would be considered the lowest level in the U.S. before living on the street. Yeah. And even if you live in the street in the U.S., you're probably better off than a lot of people. So anyway, the point is gratitude. That's the word for the day. I don't have anything big and poetic or profound to say about it, but, you know, just a nice reminder. And, you know, thank you for sharing your story about building your real estate portfolio. So now you have three properties, the one in which you live here in Austin, and
two rental properties.
And we should say your wife, Erin, she's a nurse, anesthesia nurse, right?
Mm-hmm. Nurse anesthetist.
Yeah. You guys, are you still both in your 20s? No. Have you turned the big 30 yet?
Oh, I'm 35. She's 34.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, well,
she's not 34. I didn't say that.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah, she doesn't hide her age.
See, if she would be on the podcast, hey, Erin, you want to be on the podcast now? I can hear the nope. Oh, that's funny. Anyway, Adam, thank you. And welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. Thank you for producing it and doing such a great job. And I just want to wish everybody out there a very happy Thanksgiving. If you're not in the United States and you don't celebrate Thanksgiving,
still celebrate it.
Yeah, just celebrate it. Dovetail on our celebration.
Yeah, just go with the name, not the reason.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own. And if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.